Hey, everybody. Welcome to Tectonic. My name is Mark Hurst. I'll be your host for the next hour or so. Thanks so much for joining. I hope you are having a good week. I have had a couple of good weeks, especially on this show. And I was happy to present to you two positive, feel-good, good news episodes. And of course, I'm saying this in contrast to where we're headed this evening, but I just want to set this up by saying the last two Tectonic shows were really positive. I featured conversations with people who are showing us how to live and even thrive in our technological society. Last week, I spoke with Kirk Pearson about making audio gizmos from scratch with electronic components. And the week before that, I spoke with Chris Pelletieri and Arissa Romitar about stone carving. And I have to say, all three of those individuals I found to be inspiring. And if you heard those shows, I hope you did as well. I was really happy to feature them because they all showed ways of relating to tech in what I think is a healthier way than the default that is often presented to us. They're showing us how to make music with electronics or even how to minimize our use of technology and rely on a manual skill like stone carving or soldering and circuit design. That's a manual skill as well. All of which help us to be creative in a new way that leads us to not to overstate it, but it leads us to a kind of human flourishing, okay, as opposed to the lockdown of the human spirit that occurs when we use the tools that are handed to us by big tech. And so I was happy for those two shows. And as I said, and I can't remember one of the shows, I intend to do more of those kinds of episodes where I'm spotlighting people who are doing inspiring work with technology or without technology helping us to think about and relate to technology in a new way that just gets us out of the rut of using tech by default, again, that as it is presented to us by these unethical tech giants. So that's where we've been for the last couple of weeks, okay? And then in the middle of that, a week ago, something happened that reminded me that those inspiring conversations, as important as they are, in the wider world, they are very much edge cases because the reality, really the pragmatic reality, is that we live in a society dominated by a handful of companies in Silicon Valley and Washington State, but just big tech, okay? And that event that reminded me of that was the inauguration of a new occupant of the White House in Washington, D.C. And that occurred on January 20, 2025. And what was immediately striking to me about that event was the very visible presence of big tech at the event. And in particular, the CEOs of several of the big tech companies. And that really showed to me that big tech has achieved what they have aspired to achieve, which is yet another and higher level of influence in our society. And I know that not all Tectonic listeners live in the U.S., and so this current occupant of the White House may not be a fixture of your government. We have listeners in Canada and Australia and the UK and Germany and Japan and many Netherlands, many other countries. But the inauguration heralds a new era of power and influence worldwide for big tech. And I thought it would be important for us to take an episode of Tectonic to just talk about what this means. I'm not going to talk about the inauguration the whole hour. That frankly would be rather boring as well as I think a little depressing, but it's important for us to understand what this means, Okay. Now I gotta give a little context here, because as I've said on past shows, and I think it's important to say again here, Tectonic is not a show about politics. Not that I have nothing to say about politics, but when I'm not on mic, but just the focus of the show, as I have set it up, is to talk about technology and its effects on us. And so I'm not going to get deep into politics just because of that. But the reality is, again, talking about pragmatic reality on this show tonight, the reality is that the presence of billionaire big tech CEOs at the inauguration signals a new level of political influence within those companies. And we got to talk about that, because that political influence is going to be part of how technology affects all of us tomorrow and next year, and maybe for a generation, and maybe for multiple generations. This is a big signal that we need to talk about. So if you could stay with me, you know, I'm not interested in getting into party politics. This politician said this. This policy, this bill, except where it intersects with technology. My overall take about politics within the boundaries of Tectonic goes as such: the key political struggle of our time, the key political struggle of our time, is now big tech versus the rest of us. Those are the two sides. It's big tech and it's the rest of us. And everybody has to choose a side. Everybody. Whether you're a politician, you got to choose your side. You're a citizen, got to choose your side. You own a small, medium-sized business, you got to choose your side. Media, they got to choose their side. And many, many actors, political, economic, commercial, in the arts, I mean, name any area of life, many of the influential and powerful actors in all sectors are choosing to align themselves with big tech. And that's not great. Now seeing these CEOs align themselves with the current occupant of the White House, the amount of just the immense, I don't think we even understand the immense amount of power and influence that these guys have attained now with this latest step. And so when we unpack this, you got to think, where do you want to stand? And maybe more importantly, because if you're listening to this show week after week, I have a pretty good idea of where you probably stand on big tech versus the rest of us. But more importantly, where are we going to apply our influence as individuals and communities to try to bring people onto the right side of history, where it's going to end up generations in the future? People are going to look back and say, man, who were the people who were trying to resist these guys? And what did they do to try to resist them? All right, so that's what I think about, Paul. That's, again, I have other thoughts about politics, but I don't think that they are viable for me to get into on a technology show. But within the context of Tectonic, my political take is it's big tech versus the rest of us. Okay. And so let's start by talking about who was at this inauguration. And I want to direct you to the playlist of today's show. Just go to tectonic.fm, T-E-C-H, tonic.fm, and you'll see a link to a show that's called Welcome to the Oligarchy. And you click the playlist link, and right away, you will see a photo of the inauguration with helpful labels pointing out who was there. We've got left to right in the photo that I've got top and center on the playlist page. We've got Mark Zuckerberg, CEO of Facebook. Once the depths of their misbehavior were finally reported on a couple of years ago after Frances Haugen came out with the whistleblower, the Facebook files. Facebook swiftly changed the name to Meta so people would not immediately associate them with the misdeeds of Facebook. But let's just say Mark Zuckerberg, CEO of Facebook and Instagram, also known as Meta, was there. Almost standing right next to him, Jeff Bezos, founder of Amazon. Then right next to Jeff Bezos was Sundar Pichai, CEO of Google. I believe I read somewhere that Larry Page, one of the shadow CEOs, one of the founders, one of the two founders of Google was there. I don't think Sergey Brin was there, but I think Larry Page was there at the inauguration somewhere. Next to Sundar Pichai was Elon Musk. I don't know that he needs much of an introduction on this show, but CEO of Twitter and SpaceX and Tesla and some other dodgy initiatives. And then a few people away from Elon Musk was Tim Cook, CEO of Apple. You know, that company that's always talking about how enlightened and how progressive they are and how interested in privacy and how friendly they are to the customer and just how much you can trust them. Just how trustworthy Apple. Yeah, Tim Cook was there. He was there. And I believe all these big tech companies represented there. Just amazingly, they were there after they gave $1 million to the inauguration fund. I don't know how that works. You give $1 million and suddenly you get this invitation to sit in the front row. What a coincidence. And then below that photo is a close-up shot of four of the billionaires showing, helpfully with little labels, their net worth. And so you've got Mark Zuckerberg, left to right, you've got Mark Zuckerberg, and his label shows $211 billion U.S. dollars is his net worth. Then we've got Jeff Bezos, $239 billion. I mean, you can't even conceive. How do you even conceive of that amount of money? $239 billion. And then next to him, poor guy, Sundar Pichai, only worth $1.3 billion. How did he even get invited? You're only worth $1 billion, man. And then standing to his left was Elon Musk. You ready for this? A net worth as of the inauguration, $433 billion. That's a billion with a B, as in boy, as in bad. As I could say a lot of other B words, but $433 billion net worth of Elon Musk. Unbelievable. And of course, he's now tasked with running this, oh, so funny, so clever, this Department of Government Efficiency named after his favorite meme coin, Dogecoin. Get it? D-O-G-E, Department of Government Efficiency. That's just amazing. Elon Musk, CEO of Tesla, which has enjoyed government subsidies of billions and billions of dollars out of our pockets, I'll add. U.S. taxpayers have essentially funded Tesla, which has used its rise in stock price. That is a large part of Elon Musk's net worth are the subsidies that came from American taxpayers. Department of Government Efficiency, the man who has enjoyed billions of dollars of citizen subsidies is now going to tell us how to make our government more efficient. I can't wait to see what he's able to come up with. Really, I'm saying this sarcastically. And all of this brings up, looking at this, these two photos. Again, these are on the Tectonic playlist. You can see them for yourself, tectonic.fm. Just click the playlist link for the Oligarchy Show. This brings up this quote that is often attributed to Supreme Court Justice Louis Brandeis. And it turns out that Brandeis, there's no record of Brandeis ever saying or writing these words, but he wrote some kind of sort of similar things, but not quite as tersely. So I'm going to read this quote that is often attributed incorrectly to Brandeis. But I like the quote. The quote is, "We can have a democratic society, or we can have the concentration of great wealth in the hands of a few. We cannot have both. And I really like that. Very terse, two-sentence summary and a warning that we should be paying good attention to at this moment. Brandeis is saying that you can't have a democratic society with concentration of great wealth in the hands of a few. And Brandeis, although he didn't actually say those words, but let's just say he probably thought something very similar to that. Brandeis is absolutely correct. And I can prove it to you, because the definition of democracy is not that, is not the concentration of great wealth. So if you look up in Wikipedia, let's just take a slight sidebar to talk about forms of government. Okay, so words that describe forms of government. Democracy, quoting Wikipedia here, democracy is a system of government in which power is vested in the people or the general population. And I think what's really implied there in a democracy is that power devolves to a large group of people, the general population. Yes, you can have representation, you can have a federal system, that's fine. But really, power exists in the hands of the many. And this is not the time or the show to go into a long diatribe about why, but I'll just tell you, I am an unabashed fan of democracy. I am totally committed to democracy because all of the other arrangements of concentrating power simply do not work. Read a history book. They don't work. They lead to pain and suffering for the majority of people out there, for huge percentages of the population when power is concentrated. Democracy is the best form of government. What Winston Churchill said is actually the worst form of government, except for all the other forms. So yes, it can be maddening and inefficient and irritating in all sorts of ways. I don't mean to paint a rosy picture, but compared to the other systems I'm going to list, I think you should agree, or you can agree, that democracy is our best choice. Second up is oligarchy. Now, I've named the show this evening Welcome to the Oligarchy. And so let's say what an oligarchy is. Oligarchy is a form of government in which power rests with a small number of people. Okay, so we could say that the government now being taken over largely by big tech money, these unbelievably rich and powerful big tech CEOs, chairmen, founders, whatever, represents an oligarchy because they have seized much of the political power in the executive branch, at least, on the basis of their great wealth and influence. And let me ask you this. These oligarchs, do you think that it is more likely or less likely that they're going to work towards expanding democracy in this country and elsewhere? Yeah. Okay. So we know what the aims of these oligarchs have been. You look at their track record. They run growth at any cost companies. It doesn't matter who gets harmed along the way. It could be causing genocide in Myanmar, Facebook, or it could be causing harm to teenage girls in terms of mental health and self-harm and suicide, Facebook, Instagram. They don't care. They do not care. They can say they care, but by their actions, by their track record, we can see that these companies are growth at any, and I mean any, cost. So now, when they are aligning themselves with the current occupant of the White House, we can see this counts as an oligarchy, except for the next kind of government I'm going to go through, which is a plutocracy. Maybe that's more accurate to say it's a plutocracy. A plutocracy is a society that is ruled or controlled by people of great wealth. Okay, so it's control by the wealthy. And maybe I should have said, welcome to the plutocracy. But you know what? I think it's a little more familiar for us to talk about oligarchy. and oligarchs. We've heard about the Russian oligarchs under Vladimir Putin's regime for years, and these American big tech CEOs. I don't frankly know what the categorical difference is between those guys and the Russian oligarchs. They're aligned with different individuals and nominally different forms of government, but they're growth at any cost businessmen. The end. They're not in favor of democracy. And there's one other form of government I just want to throw in here that might have, really, you'll have to evaluate for yourself how accurate this is for our current situation. But I've seen this mentioned a lot, and I like this word. It's the kakistocracy. Have you heard this word? A kakistocracy is a government run by the worst, the least qualified, or the most unscrupulous citizens. Well, maybe we have here a kakistocratic, plutocratic oligarchy. Maybe that's it. Maybe there's some hyphens in there. And that fully describes the quandary we're in. How are we going to go forward when our government is controlled by the guys who have been running big tech? When I started this show several years ago, I was trying to warn everybody, get off of these services. Take care, because these services are going to try to harm you. They are growing. They're growing in their influence. I'm telling you, look out. And I remember when I started the show, some people were saying, you're a little bit of a paranoid guy, aren't you, Mark? I mean, is this an act? Where's your tinfoil hat? I mean, come on, what's the matter with a little Facebook once in a while? Why are you telling us to get off of Google? What's the matter with Google? I mean, everybody loves Google. Apple? Why are you bashing Apple? We love Apple. Now do you see? We are in an oligarchic, plutocratic kakistocracy. Here we are. And so now we've got to think about what is the shape of this problem, and where do the incentives lie, and where are our opportunities to survive, and maybe look for little ways here and there to encourage democracy in resistance to these forces. As I said before, you got to choose a side. You're either aligned with big tech or you're aligned with the rest of us. Those are your only two choices. So that's what I thought about those guys at the inauguration. And then Brian Merchant, who's a past Tectonic guest, you can go back and listen. I think he's been on twice. Go back to tectonic.fm. You can search up Brian Merchant in the Tectonic archives and listen to his excellent interviews. He wrote a book called Blood in the Machine about the Luddites. And I really enjoy his newsletter. He wrote a piece on January 17 with the title, The Tech Oligarchy Has Been Here for Years. And I thought this was a good counterpoint, that Merchant was reminding us, look, if you're complaining, as I am, if you're complaining about the tech oligarchy, looking at these guys running around Washington, just know that this has been building for some time. This is not an overnight shift. And so I have to agree with Brian and grant that he's right about this. And Brian goes into some detail saying, for example, if you think this is just the current party in power, let me remind you that the other party that was in power the last 4 years had some senators who were completely in bed with these guys and were doing everything they could to bring them into high-level discussions and negotiations, and they got contracts and this and that. And so there is a big tech-aligned wing of the other party that you shouldn't forget. Again, this is not, I really don't think this is immediately about party politics. Is really whoever you talk to, whoever you're looking at, whoever you're studying, you have to ask, is this individual, not the party, is this individual aligned with big tech, or is this individual aligned in the interest of the rest of us? Those are really the only two options. And what Brian Merchant was saying is that over the last 4 years, there was plenty of evidence of the other party in power doing what it could to extend and amplify the influence of these guys. So really what we're seeing is the inauguration is kind of a capstone of what they've been working on with both parties' help for some time. And I don't mean to cast aspersions on everybody from the other party, because there are certain representatives and senators who are aligned for the rest of us, and they have been resisting very loudly the unethical behavior of big tech. So hear me, you got to take it on an individual by individual basis. Brian Merchant is just saying that there are people who have been assisting in the rise of big tech for some time. And then we got to the inauguration, and there was that speech that Elon Musk gave. And I got to say something about this, because here is, it's just, I don't even know where to start with this. The world's richest man, what was it? $433 billion. $433 billion, world's richest man. Some people are calling him the first buddy. And he ends his speech with a straight arm salute angled up. And then he does it again to the people sitting behind him. He does it twice. And if you look at that, the first thing that has to go through your mind is, wow, that looks exactly like a Nazi salute. And so there was this big kerfuffle in the media. Was it a Nazi salute? Maybe it was a Roman salute. Maybe it's because he was just saying hi to everybody. Don't other politicians wave? It's like, oh my gosh. All right. So I want to talk about this briefly, because again, it's significant showing the reach of these guys, that they can go, that one of them can go in an inauguration related event, standing behind the presidential seal, and can give what is indistinguishable from a Nazi salute on national, really worldwide TV. Who knows how many people are watching? And I don't think it's good to make excuses for someone to do something like this. I saw a good reaction on Blue Sky. I use Blue Sky a lot these days. I know it's it was started by billionaire Jack Dorsey. I'm on both Mastodon and Blue Sky, but you get some good some good perspectives. And there was a user, Pwn All The Things, on Blue Sky on January 21st, who wrote, "An odd thing with, is it a Nazi salute, is this reflexive need by tons of people to believe something can be bad only if it was understood by the person as bad. But since we cannot know to metaphysical certainty their mind, it can't be. This is a standard that exists in absolutely no other circumstances. For example, if someone repeatedly says racist things, they will be fired. Hopefully they'll be fired, even if some metaphysical sense, nobody can read their mind to, quote, prove they know it." And I thought that was so well said. You know, we're never going to know what Elon Musk's motivations were, what was in his mind as he delivered those salutes, if he meant to, if it was a joke, if he... who knows? I can't give all of the menu of possible options, because we can't guess the metaphysical reality inside his mind. All we know is that it's indistinguishable from a certain signal that other people have picked up and understood to be a signal to their community, their toxic community. And that's all we need to know, is the outcome, the effect. Again, if someone goes around spouting racist or anti-Semitic words and phrases, you don't need to stand there and say, "Oh, please, sir, may I understand the metaphysical state of your mind and your soul? Please give me a long accounting of what you're thinking about right at this moment before I decide how to react now that you have spewed your hateful stuff everywhere." No. If someone does something like that, it's going to be interpreted in a certain way, and that means it is wrong. Now, for the richest guy in the world to stand behind the presidential seal and to do something like that, I don't even know where to start. But I think it's important to at least acknowledge that it happened, because this is the new level of influence that these guys have, that they can do things like that, and everyone goes, what? And then life continues. And they suffer no consequences, no pushback, and they continue doing whatever it is that they're going to do. Again, we're never going to know what their actual motivations are. And in a way, it doesn't even matter. We can even assign best intentions. I've done that before on the show. Let's assign, like, go back to my my conversation with Tim Schwab about Bill Gates, his book, The Bill Gates Problem. We said in the interview, let's assign Bill Gates best of intentions. Let's just start that as a foundation. Now let's look at the effects that Bill Gates and his foundation have had on the world. It's worth exploring. It's worth examining. And we don't even need to know what Bill Gates' intentions really were. We can guess, but that's a fool's errand in the end. Look at the impact. That's what I think about this Nazi salute, or the thing that's indistinguishable from a Nazi salute, however you want to call it. Another thing that I want to say about the inauguration is that it wasn't just Facebook, Amazon, Google, and Tesla, SpaceX that were there. Okay, we got these four, and Apple as well. It wasn't just them. It wasn't just these five companies that were represented. As someone else on Blue Sky pointed out, Google, YouTube, Fitbit, Waze, Calico, SpaceX, Nest, WhatsApp, Instagram, Threads, IMDb, Twitch, Audible, Whole Foods, AWS, Zappos, MGM, and Ring were also all present. Yeah, so, and there were even many more subsidiaries and companies and brands that I could have listed. But the point is, these five companies are so entrenched in so many different businesses, even just listing the brands and companies and subsidiaries that they directly own creates a long list of companies that are not just aligned with these big tech CEOs, but are literally owned by them. And so they, in a way, were present at the inauguration as well. Again, just trying to give you a sense of the scope of the influence of what's happening and that is represented by this. As Brian Merchant put in a subsequent essay on January 21st, four of the five richest men in the world, together worth over $1 trillion, beaming in the front row, and the fifth already firmly in Trump's pocket. That the men in charge of the companies most responsible for destroying journalism, Meta's Mark Zuckerberg, Google's Sundar Pichai, and Musk himself, were in the front row of the inauguration, clapping for Trump on the same day Musk made his salute, is telling. And Jeff Bezos, the fourth tech titan in the front row seats, can tell his newspapers to spike op-eds supporting the other party or editorial cartoons criticizing the big man. Both of which have happened. You remember in the run-up to the election, the Washington Post, owned by Jeff Bezos, was going to endorse one of the candidates, and it wasn't the current occupant of the White House. It was the other candidate. And the word came down from Jeff Bezos, nope, kill the endorsement. We're not endorsing anybody. And the reason was, because, in journalism, we have to be objective and this and that. And there was this whole letter that came out of Bezos's office, whether he physically wrote it himself, but it was signed by him. And what's happened since then? Strangely, the Washington Post has been endorsing candidates. So we're looking at guys who either have helped destroy journalism, as Brian Merchant put it, Zuckerberg and Pichai and Musk, or are happy to buy a newspaper and use journalism for their own purposes. So we've got a real crisis on our hands when we don't have a healthy press. A democracy requires a healthy press. You have some ungodly percentage of Americans and people in other countries as well who get their news every day from Facebook and from TikTok. And you gotta ask yourself, is that helping us to strengthen our democracy, Or is that weakening the democracy and sending us ever further into oligarchic plutocratic kakistocracy? Which one is it? I think you know the answer to that. And so good on Brian Merchant for pointing that out as well. All right, so let's talk about alternatives, all right? Because it can't just be that we're all going to go to hell in a handbasket because everything is owned by these billionaires and we have no options and the oligarchs and plutocrats are going to win and so on. I think it's worth pointing out the misbehavior of these companies, the risk that they all put us in, but we have to have some better news. And I'm going to give you that better news after I play you this. I want to say one thing about Apple. This is because I haven't said much about Apple in my comments so far. I found this a little while ago. I think this is from a couple years ago, but it's still relevant. As for Apple, there was an announcement recently, and someone who sounds a little bit like Johnny Ive, Apple's former head product designer, has something to say about it. So let's listen to this from the non-real Johnny Ive about an announcement about Apple.
At Apple, we've solved one of the greatest challenges facing the human race, up there with endless clean water and the right click. We've created something so small, so thin, it's almost indiscernible to the naked eye. Introducing Apple's smallest ever tax bill. By diverting revenue through one Bahamas office, two Irish offices, and the same Dutch office in Holland and the Netherlands, we've managed to avoid funding schools, roads, and hospitals because we don't make those yet. Sure, it sounds intrinsically complicated, but it has an unapologetically stupid name. Double Irish, Dutch sandwich. It's been so popular that thousands of other companies and governments have been doing it too. But like an iPhone battery at lunchtime, it's almost dead. And the EU wants us to pay 14 billion in tax back. But it's okay. We've got 230 billion in the bank. Thank for that. Because I've run out of revolutionary ideas made out of bits of plastic and glass to sell you idiots. Besides, I'm rich and a knight, so you and your schools can f*** off.
All right, so that was not Johnny Ive. That was a satirical piece posted online a little while ago talking about Apple's thinnest product ever. It's their tax bill. And not to bash Apple only, I can say that this is the standard process for many of the large companies in, by the way, not just in tech, but certainly for big tech, that they use things like this, what was it, the double Dutch Irish sandwich to open up offices in different countries that have different tax laws and play one set of tax laws against another to divert the income and claim income in the right place in the right way so that you pay no taxes. These companies, and led by these billionaires that are growth at any cost, part of the problem that we face is that they are sucking up all of the wealth in the economy and they are not paying their fair share in taxes to fund things like hospitals, schools, and yes, even journalism initiatives. Sure, Google once in a while or Facebook once in a while will kick over a nickel, a couple million here or there for a journalism initiative to buy some positive press. But I mean, structurally, we have some real problems in this country when these billionaires, with their level of unethical behavior, are the ones that that we have handed all of our wealth and influence to. And now seeing them at the inauguration should be a red alert to where we are likely to be headed next. All right. So I told you there's some good news. By the way, if you're just tuning in, you're listening to Tectonic. My name is Mark Hurst. I'm your host for the remaining, about 20 minutes left. Dave Mandel is going to be coming in at the top of the hour for his show, It's Complicated. It's a prog rock show. I am talking about the oligarchy, the new oligarchy, or perhaps plutocracy, with respect to the big tech billionaire CEO's appearance and very visible presence at the recent presidential inauguration. So the title of the show is Welcome to the Oligarchy on Big Tech's Government Takeover. And having gone through all of the grim, depressing, very pragmatic, unpleasant reality of where we are and where we're likely headed, I want to say that there are some opportunities and there are some possibilities for good news. There is this idea of decentralization that a lot of you know about, or federated services. The best example is Mastodon. So when Twitter was continuing its ascent at some point several years ago, someone started Mastodon. Was it Eugen Rothko, I think was his name? I forget. Mastodon started essentially as an alternative to Twitter. It looks something like Twitter in that you have a feed of people who you follow, and there are short entries, sometimes with photos or sometimes with embedded articles that you can read through. There are hashtags that you can click to see all the posts, you know, recently or that are popular with a certain hashtag, category or topic. You can like. I don't know if it's called liking or star. I think on Mastodon, I think it's stars, but it's basically a like or a heart on different posts. You can also share. It's obviously not called retweeting on Mastodon, but you can share a certain post from someone else to all of your followers. So in its basic design, it's very similar to Twitter. And there's a little text box where you can type in your own entry, your own post, and press publish. The nice thing is, though, a couple of nice things. One is there is no algorithm. There's no algorithm whatsoever. Okay, so the posts that you get in your feed are exactly the posts of the people you follow, as opposed to what you get on Twitter or on Instagram or on TikTok or on Facebook, or even when you watch Google YouTube videos. There's always an algorithm in the background that is tuned for maximum engagement and maximum exploitation, so as to enrich the host company. It has nothing to do with making your experience better. It is only to manipulate you to make more money, to maximize the revenue that you represent to that company. It's a total exploitation of you and your mind on all of those services. That's the backbone of the sludge factories out there in Silicon Valley, are these manipulating algorithms. Mastodon has no algorithm whatsoever, which is so refreshing, okay? And the other thing is there is no advertising, which means there is no surveillance, because advertising requires surveillance for these companies to build a dossier on you and follow you creepily all over the internet, serving you up ads and doing who knows what with your data and packaging and selling off the inferences of your data to third parties who pay them enough for it. Rather than the toxic sludge, Mastodon offers a very transparent experience where you type in something, it gets sent out to your followers, and you get to see whatever gets posted from your followers. No surveillance, no ads, no algorithm. It's also open source. You can, if you're really into it, you can look into the source code yourself and see what you think. See if there's anything untoward going on underneath the hood. And as a federated service, you can set up your own instance, which is basically like setting up your own Mastodon server. And you can have people on your own Mastodon server who post within your little community on your server. But your server is also connected into the wider family of Mastodon servers. This is something that Blue Sky, by the way, does not have. They're working on something. There's a new initiative to try to get Blue Sky federated, actually with a different protocol from Macedon. But that really gets into the weeds. But Macedon is a really good example of a federated service. Now, some people prefer Blue Sky because it's a little bit, I guess it's a little bit slicker, and for other reasons, I don't know. I think they're both good services, but in its intent and its architecture, I like Macedon better because it's more pure. And the reason I'm spending some time on federation in Macedon is to show you that there is a kind of architecture online that is non-toxic. It is non-exploitative, and it's non-manipulating. It's totally transparent, open source, non-profit, and it really is designed for the benefit of the users, whoever wants to use it. So this is how technology really can be and should be designed for the benefit of us as citizens and as communities and as individuals. And it's good news that there are people who are working on services like Macedon that are really putting in the time and effort to build those for the world. And here's the twist, friends. It's not just Macedon. It's not just Macedon. There are other federated services that are alive, that have been launched, and they are out there. And one of them is called PixelFed. Have you heard about this? It's PixelFed, PixelFed.org. And it's a federated image sharing service. And if you wonder, why would I use a federated image sharing service? Well, what do most people use to share images right now? It's a toxic sludge factory called Instagram, which everybody should get off. Okay, and basically, good rule of thumb, if Mark Zuckerberg owns it, it's really good bet you should get off of that thing. And that fits with Instagram. Get off of Instagram if you can and move over to PixelFed. Or even if you have an Instagram account, just open a PixelFed account and just experiment with it. It's free. The whole thing, did I mention that about Macedon as well? It's free, 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 free. It's free, open source, non-advertised, non-profit, and so on. So PixelFed.org has this mobile app where this is just like what Instagram does. You can upload photos. You can follow other people's photo image streams. But it doesn't have all of the surveillance and manipulation and algorithms and everything else that I was talking about before. So PixelFed.org is a good alternative to Instagram. It's federated. A lot of good things about it. So what happened as PixelFed started to get more popular when Mark Zuckerberg laid off all of his content moderators? People started saying, oh, Mark Zuckerberg, he's laid off all of his moderators. He's aligning himself with the current occupant of the White House. He's going to Mar-a-Lago to have these long dinners. Who knows what is going on down there? People are finally starting to get the idea that Zuckerberg is not a trustworthy player. A lot of people have just finally figured that out in the last couple of weeks. And so they're starting to look at PixelFed. Some of them are starting to move over to PixelFed. Well, what did Facebook do in response? Well, if you're Mark Zuckerberg and you're paranoid about anybody doing anything that would take away from your success of your sludge factory, what would you do? Mark Zuckerberg started blocking access from his services to PixelFed. Yeah, not petty at all, right? PixelFed, this tiny little nonprofit organization trying to make a federated image sharing service for the good of people, Mark Zuckerberg says, no, we got to block people. Do not let people out of our toxic sludge prison. I don't even want them to know about this alternative. So what is interesting is that the PixelFed founder, this guy named Daniel Saperno, I hope I'm saying that right, wrote an open letter to Mark Zuckerberg in reaction to Zuckerberg's blocking of any mention of PixelFed. And I want to read it to you. It's from January 18, 2025. And this is all posted, like all these other resources I've talked about tonight, all posted at the playlist, tectonic.fm, T-E-C-H, tonic.fm. It's the oligarchy episode. You can find it there. Click the playlist link. Here's Daniel Saperno from PixelFed's open letter to Mark Zuckerberg. And I'm just going to read an excerpt. Dear Mark, I hope this finds you well. I noticed something interesting today. It seems Instagram is blocking links to my little open source project. You know, the one that lets people share photos without harvesting their personal data or forcing algorithmic feeds on them. I have to admit, I'm flattered. Who would have thought a small team of volunteers could build something that would catch your attention? We're just trying to give people a choice in how they share their memories online. No venture capitalists, no surveillance capitalism, just code and community. Every time you block a link to our platform, you remind people why we built it in the first place. Your action tells them there are alternatives worth exploring, ones that respect their privacy and agency. So thank you, Mark Zuckerberg. You've turned our little project into a symbol of resistance against digital monopolies. Best regards, Daniel Saperno. And I gotta say, boss move, Daniel. I mean, awesome, excellent open letter. We need more of those. We need more people out there building these nonprofit, good for the user, federated, non-surveillance services to make the internet actually usable and good for people so that Mark Zuckerberg will try to block them within his sludge factories. And we'll spread the news. We'll spread the news about each service that gets blocked by Zuck as a badge of honor that these are the services we should be using. Again, that's at pixelfed.org, pixelfed.org. You can find Mastodon. I think it's mastodon.social is the main instance if you want to try that out. There's also others. There's for video sharing instead of Google's toxic YouTube with its own sludge factory algorithm running that one. Use PeerTube. That's PeerTube. PeerTube. And you can find that at joinpeertube.org. For book reviews, don't use Goodreads. Do you know who owns Goodreads? A lot of people don't know this. It's an Amazon project. Yeah, don't use Goodreads. Do not use Goodreads. Your data is being harvested. It goes into the Amazon ecosystem. No, use Bookworm. Bookworm. That's Bookworm. That's worm with a Y. And that address is joinbookworm.com. That's for book reviews. How about data storage? You're not going to, don't tell me you're using Google Drive. Do not tell me you're using Google Drive. No. You're going to get yourself, you're going to get your stuff off of Google Drive, and I want you to use Nextcloud. That's nextcloud.com. Nextcloud, that's the one you want to use. And for events, don't schedule stuff through Gmail or whatever. You want to schedule events, use Mobilizion. Mobilizion. It's join, Mobilizion. That's for events. So you got PixelFed, PeerTube, Bookworm, Nextcloud, Mobilizion, and Mastodon. And those are half a dozen options for you, the listeners, to go out and explore and find alternatives to the toxic big tech billionaires. So as we descend into an oligarchic, plutocratic, kakistocratic government and society, know that there are options. There are good people. As Mr. Rogers used to say, look to the helpers. Look to the helpers. They're out there. They're doing good work. And you can make a different decision. You can encourage your friends, your family, your local community to make a different decision. But at every step when we use technology, just remember, we have to choose who are we aligned with. We got two options because it's big tech versus the rest of us. Let's start making the right decision. That's all the time I have this evening. I want to remind you that you're listening to the greatest radio station in the world, WFMU East Orange, WMFU Mount Hope, in New York City and Rockland County at 91.9 FM and online at WFMU.org. Until next time, friends, I got some homework for you. I want you to avoid Apple and their tax avoidance. abandon Amazon and all the subsidiaries like Ring and Goodreads and everything else, AWS. Forget Facebook and Instagram and WhatsApp. And whatever you do, friends, get off Google. And I thought we would go out this evening to a mashup that combines a number of the themes from this evening's show. Have a great week, everybody, and I'll see you next time.
On that note, or that flurry of 30-second notes, the show begins. Welcome to another episode, another installment of It's Complicated, an hour of Prague and Prague-adjacent music. I'm your host, Dave Mandel. I'm here at this time, Monday, 7 p.m., every Monday, 7 p.m. till 8. Thanks for joining me. And we are going to start tonight's show with a group that I have played before. But I like them. I'm going to play not the same track I played previously, I don't think. But this is a group I've played before. They're called A Light Sleeper. A Light Sleeper. They're from Chicago. Have I been playing a lot of music from Chicago recently? It feels that way. We're going to hear a track from a 2019 release called Distinction, a ballet in six parts. This will be a track called Invisible Measures from the group, A Light Sleeper. fantastic. A light sleeper, again, from Chicago. And that was a track called Invisible Measures from the album Distinction, released, when did I say? 2019, I believe. I'm going to stick with that. We're now going to go to Armenia. Well, not literally. I'm stuck here in Jersey City. But we're going to pretend we're going to Armenia. Our ears are going to go to Armenia. And we're going to hear something by an Armenian pianist named I'm trying to find the track I was going to play. Tigran Hamasyan. And we're going to hear something. We're going to hear a piece called To Negate, from 2015, from an album called Mock Root. This is the Armenian pianist Tigran Hamasyan. Do not attempt to dance to this piece, please.